The Major League Baseball Players Union is led by Tony Clark. We're going to do a podcast today talking about the labor unions, and we're going to try not to make it boring.
Hi, welcome to Almost Cooperstown.
I'm Mark.
And this is Gordon. And we love talking about baseball.
So making this podcast about player unions interesting, it made me think a little bit about Scott Boras. So I think we'll talk a little bit about that because he had a particularly bad week when he got fired by Jordan Montgomery after he signed the deal.
Well, he obviously cost Jordan Montgomery a lot of money this offseason.
I thought it was an interesting reaction. And so we had already talked about doing a player union discussion. I'm thinking, wow.
Well, I think you're burying the lead a little bit here because Scott Boras doesn't really have a ton to do with why we want to talk about the players.
But I think why there was nearly a mutiny or at least a sort of quasi-mutiny about a month ago in the Players Association where Tony Clark is maybe going to be out, I think is definitely impacted by Scott Boras's ability to get money for his players. And are the players getting what they should be getting from the players union? And I think a guy like Scott Boras has an impact there.
Well, I think certainly the fact that two premium free agents got bad deals this offseason because of their agent and are now getting underpaid and have essentially reset the market on what players are valued at.
You think the market's reset?
I think it hurts the market.
This year it was.
This year it was, but I think it's going to have a ripple effect in the next year because people are going to be able to use those. It's going to be hard. You're not going to be able to have that constant increase up. We were able to step back on what we paid players for a season, and that's going to have an impact on what players get offered next season, I think.
So you talk about Blake Snell and even J.D. Martinez of the Mets.
Jordan Montgomery.
And Matt Chapman, you know, right, who was supposed to get a bigger contract than he got. These are all Boras clients. And so the players union, which now represents not only the major league players, but as of a couple of years ago, they now represent the minor league players.
This is a big difference.
It's a big difference because until that point, you know, the minor leaguers were sort of an afterthought. The major league baseball players invited, if you will, the minor league players in. And now you've got a bunch of people at the very top who make a lot more money than most of the other people in this union when you include the minor league players.
Oh, well, certainly. And what is the MLBPA? Because I think that's always something that's not particularly well defined for people. And certainly I didn't know exactly what they did. And so the MLBPA is simply the collective bargaining representative for all current major league and North American minor league baseball players. So they negotiate the terms and conditions with Major League Baseball and ensuring their rights are upheld. So this covers anybody that's in the MLB, anybody that's in the domestic minor leagues, and Canadian minor leagues. So that's who the MLBPPA represents, and they're sort of the opposite to the owners whenever they're negotiating with Major League Baseball. So they're responsible for making sure that all the playing conditions for all games for all Major League players are properly upheld. They meet all proper safety guidelines, and they also serve as a group licensing agent on behalf of the players.
And there's a lot of licensing.
So that's a big deal because this is the organization that gets a lot of the money for all of their appearances and likenesses when they're used and everything.
And the owners are sort of in business to divide the union wherever they can in order to, you know, get what they want, you know.
And certainly the players try to do the same with the owners.
So the fact that a younger guy, Marino, came into the players union and started questioning what Tony Clark is doing, what the leadership is doing. And there are thoughts out there that the last collective bargaining agreement reached a couple of years ago
didn't go great for the players.
Wasn't as good for the players as the players might have hoped. Now, it's hard to be upset with a minimum salary in the major leagues of $700,000 now,
right?
You know, and average salary is well over $1 million, obviously.
And I think that's one of the difficulties when you're talking about this, because so much of what we're talking about within the players union is the disagreements between the haves and what we're going to call in this situation the have-nots.
Well, they're not the have-nots, though.
Not in reality, but in this story, they are. The minor league players and the lower-tier major league players live in a very different world than your elite major league players, especially when it comes to how they're dealing with the MLBPA.
Well, I even think of the differences between the major league players and the minor league players in that if you looked at the way the union was before, it was a dispute between the millionaires and the billionaires.
Right.
Right, right. And so now you've got the minor league players. You can have a guy in there who's making $70,000 to play second base in single A ball, who was never going to make it, maybe even out of single A, and he is part of this union. They don't have the same the players union doesn't at the MLB doesn't have the same modus operandi or interest as the minor leaguers do.
Well, no, because the people that have the most power in the players union are so far removed from that guy. It's difficult to expect them to be able to adequately fight and represent what that guy in single A ball that's making no money and has no chance at the major leagues needs from the MLBPA, because they're concerned what major leaguers in the major leagues need.
Right, right. And this incarnation of the players union was formed in 1953, but there are labor union things in baseball that go back to Hall of Famer John Montgomery Ward, who was not only a Hall of Fame player, but was also a huge advocate for player salaries and rights, so to speak. What they could never get squared away was the fact that the original rules went back to having the major league clubs own the services of these players in perpetuity. And so that lack of, and until Kurt Flood challenged that reserve clause, and we finally got free agency in 1976. One of the things I thought was really interesting is that the decision they had a suit in that went to the mm-hmm. Supreme Court. So Baltimore versus the National League Professional Clubs was due to a narrow, though relatively standard for that area, interpretation of interstate commerce, saying that baseball was exempt from provisions in the Sherman Antitrust Act. According to baseball antitrust expert Nathaniel Grau, baseball was fortunate to face the lawsuit during the 1920s when the antitrust regulations were interpreted more loosely than in other decades. Had the MLB traced that lawsuit in the 1940s rather than the 20s, the court would have certainly held that the sport was subject to the Sherman Act. Well, that's a huge thing that baseball has been sort of leaving in this antitrust area, you know, because of the way the laws were.
Or because they just happened to get the right case on record at the right time, and nobody's ever really tried to make them reevaluate that.
Well, I mean, Kurt Flood, basically, when he was traded against his will, said, "I'm not a piece of property, and I'm not going to go." And that didn't really work out well for Kurt Flood, unfortunately. Unfortunately, but it enabled Marvin Miller and the Players Association of that time to move forward and get into the free agency led by Andy Messersmith and Dave McNally in 1976. Those are the first guys to get, you know, they had served 6 years. They came up with the stipulations as to why they would be free agents.
Right, why they should be able to decide where they want to go.
So that was a big win for the players union.
I mean, that's probably the biggest win that they could have ever gotten.
And you know, there was a lot of years that the Major League Baseball Players Union, or Association as you call it, was the most thought to be the most powerful union in the United States, which is kind of interesting. That you, because they had power over the guys that owned their
teams,
contracts.
Right, exactly. Now, I don't think anybody would be saying that nowadays, certainly.
I think that's it, is that all of a sudden, you know, where is the union? They're losing out is sort of the feel a little bit on these players. I mean, they're getting a lot of money. I mean,
right. And that's kind of and I think that's one of the things that's changed, is that with the explosion of the contracts, the fans aren't necessarily as always on the side of the players, because there are times where the complaints just sort of come off as millionaires whining, and it's hard for the average American to totally sympathize with guys that are making more money in a year than they'll make in their life, being upset about, like, in their minds, inconsequential things, and in certain fans' minds, certainly.
Yeah, no doubt. And I mentioned John Montgomery Ward. So when he formed the Brotherhood of Professional Baseball Players mm-hmm. in 1885, nine players, they basically sought to fight against baseball's reserve clause in 1885 and proposed a cap on player salaries. This is 1885. They're talking about capping player salaries.
And I think what's interesting is that it's not like there aren't these player groups that are involved within the Major League Players Association, because I think Jack Flaherty was a member of like one of these subcommittees. And he talked about how he was upset, I think, on March 24th with Marino and what had happened. And he expressed regret for kind of like being involved in this situation. And I think it's definitely the kind of thing where my guess is that Marino is saying things that are important and that he's not wrong.
He's questioning the status quo.
Right. And that could be in that. And I can see why people would get behind that. But I think it's also to get very easy easily swept up in things aren't the way they should be. We need change without really thinking about what that change is and what we're going for. Because the idea that minor league baseball players probably aren't being fairly represented by the MLBPA and aren't getting their fair share of the cut probably isn't too far from being accurate if I had to just take a wild guess.
But I'd also say that the major league players who have worked so hard to get to the status that they're at, like okay, we'll give a little money for the minor league guys, but I don't want them to get too much of my money.
The flip side I also say is it's not like they're making any money on those single A games. It's not like any of the money baseball is throwing off.
But the future of baseball in some ways is contingent upon the talent that you nurture at the lower levels.
It's like, okay, it's necessary for the existence of baseball, yet baseball entirely subsidizes it.
Well, and it started that way, right? So baseball was responsible for paying for all the minor leagues. So what baseball did a few years ago was they cut 40 teams.
Right. And ultimately, that was the right decision. I think that the fans' expectations that every team was going to be maintaining four multiple teams,
right,
of minor league
players. That was
something
born out of Ranch Rickey in the 1940s and stuff, you know, right, when they had D-level teams and stuff like that.
We didn't need that. So I think it's fine that we've shrunk the minor leagues. I think that ultimately, especially considering for how few guys it was actually meaningful for, and what I mean by that is there were so few guys that were actually playing in minor league baseball that were doing it because they needed the path to the majors. The vast majority of guys were just there so those guys had people to play against.
It's one of my favorites, right? Right. Now, the minor league teams are, you have 25 guys, two guys you're really interested in, 23 guys that need to play with the other two guys. So right, they have someone to play with.
They have opponents and stuff. So I think that's a bit of the issue. Now, I think the other reason why the MLBP players union budget is under fire is they were really dragging their feet on submitting it. They needed to have it in like by
on their
the
budget
end of
on their budget,
right? And I think they just
so what's going on here?
Right? Why are they messing?
So Tony Clark comes under fire for that as well.
Right. And so I think there's the feeling of, now I think what's interesting is that this is a time in baseball where it's not only the players union that's having a bit of internal strife, because you can look over at the owners and they're probably the furthest away from being in perfect lockstep like they usually are than they've been in a while. They're not all super happy with each other, which is unusual because usually they're pretty aligned on almost everything.
But you don't really hear too much about the owners talking about other owners privately.
There's so many less of them. It's 30 people that got to keep their mouths shut instead
right.
of so many more. It only takes one player mouthing off about the Players Association to cause an issue. One of the owners is never going to make the mistake about mouthing off the other owners.
So in the past, when you had a dispute between the players and the owners, and you go back to the 1914 with the Federal League, right? That was basically the players saying, we want to control our own destiny. We're going to be part of a new league, a rival league.
Didn't quite work out.
And then that league shut down after a year. And there have been other leagues, rogue leagues, that have popped up with the idea that they're going to challenge, sort of like the USFL in football versus the NFL. That never really seemed to take hold.
I gotta think that big things, because we have this, because obviously what they're, you know, you think, okay, in the reserve clause, free agency were the big things the players union was fighting for. So what, given there's internal strife there, what do you think it is they feel like they don't have right now or that they should be getting right now?
Well, I would think at the top of the list is more control of where they go than they have right now. And you know, things like the Super Twos, which we talked about, you know, there's only a few players that after 2 years can, you know, are good enough to be able to be treated a little differently
than
the other.
I'm sure
the
players would love to do something about, like, service time
right
manipulation. They would probably love to get rid of that,
and the owners are hip to that, in that I think that there have been some examples of players that have been brought up that aren't necessarily in the club's best interest.
Teams are generally shifting away. Look at the Orioles. They just brought up Jackson Holliday. They're not kind of, teams aren't really messing around. If they have a young player they think they can help their team, they're not going to keep them out of the pros for a couple of months so they can get an extra year out of them. It doesn't seem like they're as interested in that.
But the players union is getting about half the revenue. That's where they're at. Well, they'd like a little more than half, and the owners would like a little more than half.
I'm sure the players are probably hammering the union for the uniform situation right now, given how generally unhappy the players seem still.
Yeah, I think that's more a question of lack of communication on how this whole thing went down.
Right, but they're gonna hold the player union responsible, the players association responsible, because they're the ones that are, they're like, how could
you let this happen without us knowing these were gonna be so bad?
Right. And I'll admit, I was watching the Met Royal game last night, and the Royals on their sleeve have this giant red patch,
And it, like, also at least the Met patch on their uniform, like, has the same color scheme, so you kind of don't notice it that much. The advertise, like, they could kind of do a better job with the blending these advertisements into the jersey, so they're not as eye poppingly noticeable. Like, they should be built, like, they should look good, not garish.
So I think, you know, they're not, obviously the CBA doesn't happen until December of 2026.
It's a while ago.
So, but we're thinking about that now because the leadership of the Players Association should be set long before that, in terms of what's the direction
this is how
they're
gonna
be going.
This is how, if you're Ken Marino, right? Yeah, Harry Marino. I'm sorry, Harry Marino. Yeah. This is how, if you're Harry Marino, you get minor league player organizer, as a minor league player organizer, this is how you get their concerns to the forefront. You start now, so that Tony Clark has to be making concessions before he ever gets to 2025, and you start having to gearing up to deal with the owners then.
And you know, I have nothing against Tony Clark at all. It'd be an interesting guy to talk to, actually.
I mean, obviously.
But, you know, he's been there, obviously, you said, over 10 years, and he was there before the minor league players were part of the Major League Baseball Players Union. So it makes me wonder, is that the right person to have running the show, because it's so different than what it was when he came in there?
I also just think he's been there since 2004.
He's only been in the job as player association since 13.
Oh, since 13. I thought
he's probably been in the office for that long.
Right.
Former Met, by the way.
He's been there for 10 years, and he was, you know, that's a long time to be in this position as leading the players union. And given how much it's changed, I could see why people would say, hey, maybe it's time for somebody else to take over that has a fresh perspective. But I could also see, maybe we let the current situation play out a little bit so we can pick with somebody with a bit of experience that's seen the world with both the minor league and the major league players both under the same banner. Because right now, anybody you're bringing in basically has the same experience he does with it.
And you know, Tony Clark, I always think about him as Player Association president because, you know, he was a pretty good major league player, played for the Tigers, and I mentioned he played for the Mets. I think he played for the Yankees also for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's 6'7".
Very tall.
That's a very big man to have representing the players, and I wonder sometimes if his physical stature is like not – it should be an asset to say, you know, it's, you know, this is a big guy. Does it matter?
Only as much as the baseline psychological influence it has on people, that generally when you're negotiating with a big person, you're going to treat them with more respect than somebody you feel like you're able to physically dominate. But I imagine in the world of lawyers in boardrooms, physical size is not nearly as important as the ability to verbalize your arguments in these rooms.
Mentioned Scott Boras before, and you know, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that the beginning of the end of his relevance as a super agent. I would say you wouldn't call him anything else.
I think you'd have to see this. You'd have to see an underperformance from him for multiple years. And all that would maybe suggest to me is that the MLB teams are kind of done dealing with Scott Boras's shenanigans, and they're not going to deal with somebody that tries to extort them in quite the way he does.
And I guess he sort of had, you know, he had the advantage in some respects over the owners because it wasn't that long ago that Bryce Harper got $330 million from the Phillies. By the way, something he wants to renegotiate now.
And it also could be that, you know what, there's just a certain point it hits where the teams just aren't willing to pay any more money. And Boras is a desire to squeeze every drop of blood for the stone. They might just be like, you know what, it's not worth our dollar.
You know, do you think when the short-term deals for Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery came out, on these are Boras clients, and then Spencer Strider goes down with the UCL surgery he had just the other day, and Shane Bieber's having that. And so all these pitchers, the risk in signing a pitcher to a long-term deal seems greater than it's ever been.
Oh, certainly.
Right? So if that's the case, why would you want to give anybody more than 3 years as a pitcher when these guys are looking for 7, 8, 9, Cole type deal?
If you're going to give a guy a 7, 8, 9 year deal and he's going to miss two of that, that's killer.
Right. Even the Rangers, no matter what happens with Jacob DeGrom,
they can't be thrilled.
This is not a winning deal for the Rangers. They can hope to salvage something.
No, that's probably the only reason why Met fans didn't, you know, throw themselves off a bridge when the Rangers won the World Series last year. Or was it really like Jacob DeGrom was the chief reason why they got there and won?
Yet Boras is a guy, I think, that can have honest conversations. He's got relationships with every owner because it's in his interest,
his
client's interest, every owner in the major leagues, so that, you know, the Players Association looks at him with a wary eye going, we can't tell if this guy's in bed with the owners. Is he representing the players?
Scott, here's the thing that you know if you're a player you're dealing with Scott Boras. Scott Boras is out for one person, Scott Boras. And so he's going to do anything in his power.
Well, he'd say for two. It would be me and my client.
Me and my client. But Scott Boras is about Scott Boras. And Scott Boras wants to make sure whatever deal his player is signing is the absolute maximum value possible, because then he's getting the most money possible.
For the longest time, I thought, why wouldn't you want to have Scott, if you're a player, Scott Boras represent you? Because if his goal and his
success. Well, you know what? Now if you're Jordan Montgomery and Blake Snell, this is why.
Right.
He cost you money this offseason.
Maybe. And I'm not 100% convinced.
There were deals on the table that I am sure Scott Boras helped convince them not to take.
Right, because he said all you do is go out and pitch your butt off this year
and you'll make
it a bigger deal next year. And I guess, certainly Montgomery's the only guy that fired him. Snell has not, and nor has anybody else yet.
Yeah.
And thinking, this is my last go around. So it's so dependent on your current performance. And when you're an older pitcher, that's a little nerve wracking, right, particularly when you can get hurt.
Especially when it can just be something as simple as you just had a bad BABIP year. So, guys hit balls where fielders weren't, and you gave up a bunch of runs that, you know, you really didn't pitch badly. You just had bad luck. It can happen.
We're so far ahead of the next CBA that we really can't anticipate what the major issues will be other than the ones we kind of touched on right now. But I do think that, you know, Tony Clark might do the Players Association a solid by stepping down.
The thing is, he has to be stepping down in a context where they clearly know what they want to do from there.
That's fair.
He can't just step down and leave them in a lurch with nobody there to manage them, because that doesn't necessarily help them. I mean, if anything, it makes them easier for the owners to pick at, because now they can potentially try and create a wedge by whoever the players initially start going for. You start promoting just some other guy.
Yeah, but by him holding off on stepping down for the right person, that might not be the right person. might be the wrong person.
Right, but I think
Clark.
You have to have some kind of plan. He can't just be like, okay, you know what? For the right of the organization, I'm going to step down. You guys figure out who comes next. That doesn't seem like it would do them much good.
And I think this young Harry Marino, I think he's in his early 30s or whatnot. I mean, having a much younger voice, one that wasn't
a player,
right? I think that's a huge thing.
That's going to be a hard hill for him to climb, I think.
Not if he knows how to get the players what they want better than what they feel they're getting right now.
Right, but he's got to show he's got to be able to do that, and I don't know how a guy like that does that.
So
not without being able to negotiate a role in this current upcoming CBA. That's the thing. If you're Harry Marino and you want to become the next Tony Clark, you have to find a way to get your desires and what you, the people you're representing right now in the minor leagues, if you can get their needs fulfilled, that would much more strongly suggest you as a viable candidate to then replace Tony Clark.
I think his whole key, and by the way, Marino's just one name. There could be other
there's
people that come up.
Be others.
But Marino's biggest strength is that he is not and can't be Tony Clark.
Right.
Right, because
he's not somebody
a former
different.
Player. He's just comes from such a different perspective. And if I think the players union should think about that in terms of what's best for us. And is a player really the right person to have, you know, the only way we can go to have, you know, representation?
Well, that's for the players to decide.
It is indeed.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us on your favorite podcast platform, or follow us on YouTube, where we have video form of these podcasts.
Or you can also follow us on social media, on Insta, on Twitter, or on Facebook at Almost Coop. Thanks for listening.